Your first eight guys maybe should be blue plate specials, but those back five guys, they should be more like tin hats, more guys that are grunt players, garbage players that dive for the ball.
You are listening to the Scrambled Eggs Podcast on CracksSidewalks.com.
It is time for an off-season check-in here on Scrambled Eggs, your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast here on Crack Sidewalks. Phil, how's the off-season going for you so far?
Good. I just think I got the majority of the Guinness out of my veins for my trip to Ireland, and I'm fully recovered and ready to talk about what was the Marquette season this year.
Yeah, I'm glad you didn't take any risks over on the Cliffs of Moher, and you were able to safely navigate the roads of Ireland and come back to us safely. What we're going to do, our long overdue kind of recap of the season, maybe some final takes from the year. But I thought we'd start the show, Phil, with just some news and notes of what's been going on since we last spoke, since the season ended after the NIT. And there's actually been quite a bit of comings and goings within the program. Out, Harry Froehling, he has transferred. The quote-unquote pursuing professional opportunities, one of my favorites on the press release.
Raise your hands, Chris Carwell, if you didn't see that coming with a week or two left in the season.
Yeah. The old Todd Mayo escape, as I like come to call it, pursuing professional opportunities. Although he has signed with a pro team in Australia. Chris Carwell is gone from the coaching staff. He has now replaced Jeff Capel at Duke, who took the Pitt job. So Carwell's going back home. And Marquette has since replaced him with Dwayne Killings, who is a former assistant at UConn. He was on Kevin Ollie's staff, and he was looking for a job, so Wojo brought him on board. We almost lost Stan Johnson there. He was a finalist for the Fresno State head coaching job, so while I hate it for him that he didn't get the head coaching job what he wanted, that's great for Marquette that he is back with Marquette for at least another year. Phil, what jumps out to you as far as the comings and goings in the Marquette program since we last spoke?
I think what jumps out to me more than the goings is really the stayings, I guess. You know, with Stan Johnson staying and I'm blanking, there was another one of the other
Brett Nelson, he was a finalist for, I forget which job it was, but yes. Yeah, he was mentioned in connection with another.
Yeah, Brett Nelson was, you know, I have a conspiracy theory, maybe it's me just wishful thinking, hopeful thinking, that I mean, if you look at it, there weren't a ton of jobs out there. I mean, quite frankly, who really wanted the Pitt job? Apparently Jeff Capel, but there weren't really any great head coaching positions out there. Not a lot of turnover in staff. There was actually more folks available than not available, given, you know, some of the firings. So I guess my conspiracy theory is that the assistants are sticking around another year for two reasons. One, hoping that there'll be some higher visibility jobs open that they can jump at. And two, next season should be a good season for Marquette. And so maybe that increases their value as opposed to coming off a so-so not great season, maybe coming off a season where Marquette's highly rated throughout the season or something like that. So that's my theory as to why we didn't see more turnover, because you would think with some of the coaches we have on staff that you'd see more turnover than not.
Well, I don't know if I agree with that necessarily, because obviously Stan would have taken the Fresno State job had he been offered. You know, he was a finalist for that job. But, you know, I think when you're looking, especially when you're looking for your first head coaching job, you know, I don't think too many assistants would be that picky. I mean, obviously you wouldn't go to a program that doesn't spend any money, but blanking on me which job Nelson was connected to, but again, had he been offered, I'm sure he would have left. I think Wojo's actually been pretty fortunate that he has had pretty minimal turnover for the most part on his coaching staff since he took the job. I mean, normally you're replacing like one assistant every year, and there's just a lot of turnover. And so you're always bringing in new guys to kind of, you know, get used to your system, the way you do things, the way you run the program, and you know, getting used to the recruiting pipelines that you've been using and also bringing in their own. But I mean, he's had Stan for a couple of years. I think Nelson's been there since the first year, I believe.
Yeah, for the first year. I mean Carwell's really the first assistant to leave the program
Phelps left, and that's when Stan Johnson came in. Mark Phelps went to Arizona, I believe it was.
Okay.
And then then Stan Johnson came in. But yeah, that's been most of the turnover. You know, Travis Diener was on the staff for a couple of years, and then he left.
But he wasn't technically a named assistant. He was like director of basketball operations. No, he was not an assistant.
Yeah, he was like just he was on the staff. But yeah, as far as official assistant coaches, yeah, I mean, I think I may be wrong here, but Wojo only had four assistant coaches in 4 years total.
I believe that's correct.
I think it's just Phelps that maybe I'm forgetting somebody from the first year, but I want to say Nelson's been there since the beginning, and so had Carowell up until this point, and so I guess Dwayne Killings would now be the fifth, heading into his fifth year. You know, I'm not really one to judge assistant coach hires one way or the other. Seems like a fine hire. I mean, he was recruiting at UConn. UConn's normally after some pretty high profile guys. People who know him seems to think highly of him as a workhorse, a guy who is going to recruit well, and I think that's all you can ask. I think there was some sense on the following the Marquette tweet, Twitter opinions out there, that Marquette needed to hire a defensive wizard of some sort to fix the defense, and I just thought that was kind of a pipe dream. Football, where there's an offensive and defensive coordinator and special teams.
Go ahead.
But yeah, it's not like football where there's offensive, defense, and special teams. You know, you're just hiring good coaches who can teach all aspects of the game. Maybe some of them have some specialties, but really you just want good recruiters and guys who are going to do things the way you want to do things. So, yeah, I'm good with the Dwayne Killings hire. I have no reason not to be. So I just don't think there was a defensive wizard out there. I don't know who even you would start with. I know there was the assistant at Michigan, and that's where some people got that idea that you can just hire a defensive wizard to fix everything. But I think that's kind of a rare case as more as the exception. I can't think of really any other case where a school hired an assistant coach who was a wizard at the team's biggest weakness and just fixed everything. I mean, I just don't think that was something that's realistic. So Wojo got a guy he likes, and hopefully a guy who's going to help bring in more talent. So I'm good with Dwayne Killings coming on board.
Well, yeah, the most at this point, like, I get it if Wojo after year one brings someone, you know, like a veteran coach to come onto the bench and, you know, help season him a little bit. But at this point, it would be a little weird looking, you know, from Wojo's perspective to bring on some coach to come, you know, whether it makes sense or not, I think it'd be a tough ask for him to, like, visually, you know, with an assistant coaching slot, like, acknowledge, yeah, I really suck at a couple of these things. I'm going to go get a guy that's going to fix everything. One, I don't think that exists, and two, it would just be a little weird. I mean, I think the most important thing is, like, how is Dwayne Killing's basketball game? Is he going to help with the noontime games? Is, you know, with Carowell leaving? Is that...
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, Carowell's a pretty big-time player in those noon coaching scrimmages, so I don't know if he can play at Carowell's level, but I guess he'll probably learn to swim pretty quick, because I know those games get pretty intense. Just real quickly, now with Harry Froehling gone, that was just, I guess, an experiment that didn't work out. I really don't know what else to say about it. We saw the potential that Wojo and the coaching staff saw, but it just didn't work, and I think Marquette will be fine moving on from Harry Froehling.
Well, I think, had it worked out, it would have been great, right? I mean, there was a few flashes, right? That was one of the most frustrating things was he had like 7 minutes in one game where you're like, well, hey, look at this. But it never really developed as much more than that. So you take a flyer on him. If it works out, great. Otherwise, I mean, you know, post presence or post capability, depending on how you project Joey Hauser and Ed Morrow, that's not a position of need. If we can turn that Froehling position into, a guard or, you know, some sort of dynamite transfer point guard that's going to solve all of our problems next year. I think you can do more with that than having Froehling stick around. The writing was on the wall.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, he barely saw the floor at the end of this year, and the playing time wasn't going to get any easier next year with Ike Eke coming off his redshirt year. Joey Hauser will be eligible, as will Ed Morrow. So didn't see any playing time for him. Again, the flashes, there may have been a total of 5 good minutes of basketball, really. Other than that, it just didn't work out. So hopefully it works out for him in Australia, but it just didn't work out at Marquette. But you mentioned, Phil, you know, if you can flip that roster spot into a guard spot, and it seems like Wojo and the staff have been all over the place trying to recruit guards for next year, specifically grad transfers. I'm not going to run down like necessarily everybody, but I guess the most notable you've seen out there, Joe Cremo from Albany. I think the ship may have sailed on him because I think some blue bloods are after him now, like Duke and Kentucky seem to be interested. So if he's going anywhere, he's probably going to a program like that. The guy that Marquette seems to be most closely tied to is Joe Chartouni, who's from Fordham. He's kind of seems like the perfect fit. Like, he's not a guy who's going to score anywhere close to what Rousey did, but he's a guy who can distribute and play defense, and he's a, you know, he's longer than what than Rousey and Howard as well. So that's a guy I think Wojo really wants for next year because he's immediately eligible, and he's been also connected to a couple of traditional transfers. Kobe McEwen, who is from Utah State, I believe. He's a guy he would sit one and play two. So he is interesting. And then I saw he's got a visit coming up with Deshaun Bird from Robert Morris. He's a combo guard. Really don't know much about either one of those guys. I can't say I've actually seen either one of them play. But Wojo seems to be trying to stock up on guards both for next year, the 2018-19 season, and the year following that, the year when Howard and Hauser will be seniors.
Yeah, so there's definitely some talent out there. Again, I think the main benefit, if you will, of Froehling's transfer is that it opened up a second scholarship that we can basically – I think Chartouni's got to be the number one, simply given that he's immediately eligible, longer point guard. But that second scholarship allows us to take someone that can sit for a year because, again, playing time next year, assuming we get somebody like a Chartouni, I mean, we're going to be 10 deep in talent. So – you know, you don't necessarily need to have a 12th or 13th player on the roster that's available. So you can kind of pseudo bank that by taking on someone who's got to sit a year. So I think it makes sense. And then it also balances the classes out, right?
Yeah. And to me, balancing classes really isn't important. It's nice if you have a, you know, 3-3-3 and 4, you know, I mean, it's nice and clean, but you can always kind of make up for that because you just kind of have to live year to year because, you know, you just got to build the best team you can each year because if you don't, you may not have too many years after that. So balancing the classes, while it looks nice, really not that much of a priority to me. I do think, though, that Wojo's going to want to have a couple scholarships available for that 2019 class because he's definitely connected to a few guards in that class as well. So keep an eye on a few of those. And it seems like maybe it's just because I'm close to it. It seems like he's after a lot of guys in Texas.
Yeah. It's kind of been the thing, right? I mean, Texas basketball has just been that good.
Yeah, I mean, I will say the Dallas-Fort Worth area is very good this coming year. The guy I've heard most is Jalen Wilson, who's a swingman from Denton Geyer. Tyrese Maxey is an interesting one. You know, people have long assumed that he's going to go to SMU because SMU hired his dad, but his dad is no longer on staff at SMU, so all of a sudden that's wide open again. But then Kentucky offered him, so wouldn't hold your breath on Tyrese Maxey ending up at Marquette, but I'm saying there's more of a chance now than there was before because I think the SMU thing is out the window. But so there's a lot of guys to kind of keep track of. I think generally speaking, Phil, I'm kind of with you. You need somebody for next year, right? I mean, you got to have – I think it's pretty obvious Marquette needs another point guard for next year. I think going at it with Marcus Howard as the lead point guard and Greg Elliott backing him up, and then I think you're looking pretty thin at the guard spot if that's the way you're going to go. It'd be nice to still be able to play Marcus Howard off the ball and have Greg Elliott as kind of your super sub combo guard off the bench who could play either the one or two. I think that would be an ideal role for him. So having a lead guard who is eligible next year would be ideal. And if you can also, you know, tuck away a guard for next year, like Kobe McEwen, who has Marquette in his final three. I think it's Creighton, Grand Canyon, and Marquette are his final three. I think that's an ideal situation because then you would have an experienced guard ready to play alongside Marcus the following year. So I think that's the ideal situation, say, if you get Chartouni and McEwen. But, again, we'll see if the mutual interest is there. Looks like most of those guys do have visits. Cramo doesn't. I don't think, like I said, I don't think he's happening, but I think between Chartouni, McEwen, and Burke, I think all those guys seem to have at least modest to high interest in joining Marquette.
Yeah, well, I agree with your assessment in terms of you want to put somebody on the roster that can play immediately and can support the guard position, because I mean, we'll see. I'm holding out hope that Greg Elliott's handle was severely impacted by his thumb injury, and he's since had off-season surgery, and by all accounts it went well, so maybe he can play the point guard position. But I sure as heck haven't seen enough that would tell me, yeah, we can roll the dice there. So I think the priority has to be getting somebody that can play in the backcourt successfully with Marcus, because, you know, as we saw this year, the Rousey Howard combination just it couldn't get the job done, and I don't know that Greg and Marcus playing together was necessarily any better.
Yeah, I mean, it was a little better, but I agree with you. I think you need I like Greg as kind of the super sub combo guard coming off the bench, who could play either the one or the two, and like having a lead point guard would be ideal. So those are some things to track over the next few weeks. Paint Dutch is doing a great job with the free agent tracker. That's a pretty good resource if you want to kind of keep track of who is out there, who Marquette is after. So shout out to them. They're doing Ryan Jackson, I think, is the one who's doing a really good job there. So kind of keep an eye on that. So Phil, why don't we just do our own little recap of the season? I know you kind of came up with a list of awards, so I'll let you kind of drive the conversation there and kind of toss out some awards, and that these awards that you're throwing out, I think, generally kind of sum up the season as a whole. So why don't you kind of take the lead and kind of whichever award you would like to start with, and we'll just kind of start going through them as we kind of recap the 17-18 edition of Marquette Basketball.
Yeah, so we got a series of awards here, and we haven't, I mean, other than kind of coming up with a list, we haven't necessarily talked about what we would put in each category, but let's maybe start with the favorite, you know, let's start positive. What was your favorite moment of the season? And by the way, some of these awards are somewhat silly and some are legitimate. We'll start with the legitimate. What was your favorite moment of the season?
And by legitimate, we are not actually making awards and sending to anybody, so they're
not.
We just don't have the budget for that.
But the most amount of work we've done around this is simply to make a list and to text it to each other. That's
exactly
all we're going to do.
So that's how much research goes into this. For me, I think my favorite moment, there were a couple to kick around, but the one that I think I will remember most from this past season was Marcus Howard scoring 52 against Providence. In a lights out performance, was 11 three-pointers made, and just an unconscious second half shooting the basketball. It's just a performance I won't forget in a game that was really important as far as, you know, staying alive, as far as tournament hopes at the time. Even though it was relatively early in the conference season, it was a road game that you really wanted to get. Performance of the year for me, for an individual, and for me it was the most memorable one, was Howard dropping 52.
Yeah, I would say actually my favorite or most memorable would be the game against Creighton on the road, especially given where we were at. We had lost 5 out of 6 previously, and we're just in just a terrible place. And then Marcus has his pelvis explode late in the first half. Marquette's down, I think, 14, or was it 12 at half?
I think we were all ready to shut down the season when Marcus was lying there on the floor and Marquette was down big to Creighton. But yeah, that was a stunner, and it just kept all hope alive. So that's a pretty good nomination.
Yeah, well, I debated over this one simply because that was the game that, like, gave us, I would argue, some false hope that, yeah, maybe this is all going to work out in the end, that they figured the defensive problems out. They know it's clearly obvious that we're not playing Rousey and Howard together. And then, you know, once Marcus was ready to go, it was like as if that lesson had never been learned. But it was just pretty crazy exciting to see that come back and be excited for it. So that was probably my favorite of the whole season.
Honorable mention for me, probably just anytime you can boat race
yes.
Madison in their own house is pretty good. So
yeah, the throat slash from Rousey and Marcus.
Yeah, that was just always a satisfying win. Anytime you can go up there and win that big, so. But to me, Marcus Howard's 52 is my favorite moment. All right, what's your next award for the season?
Okay, so this is one of the more silly ones, and this is reference to a show that you and I have both watched, Arrested Development. The Job Bluth. I've made a huge mistake.
I love Joe Bluth. When's that show coming back anyway? Should Netflix have made another season by now?
I think it's coming back this fall, actually.
All right, well long overdue. So
they've made a huge mistake by taking too damn long with it.
Yeah, for me, the huge mistake, as always, anytime it happens, is losing to DePaul. That is my huge mistake of the season for Marquette. Now, granted, the way things maybe played out, maybe losing that game didn't necessarily keep Marquette out of the tournament, but it did really effectively end all hope of being a tournament team, and it put Marquette in a situation where it had to beat Villanova to keep its season alive, and of course they did not. So losing on the road to the worst team in the conference, really one of the worst power conference teams in the country, with your season on the line, is always a huge mistake. They went to the greater Chicago area and played very poorly. That, to me, was the biggest mistake of the season.
My biggest mistake, and I've mentioned it twice now, I think it was just the Rousey-Howard combination in the backcourt. I mean, I get it, but by every account and measure, it didn't work in our favor the majority of the time. And I get the attractiveness of it. But it just, I think it cost us a couple of games just trying to maximize those two guys playing together. And, you know, I get it. 'Cause you're depending on freshmen otherwise, like Greg Elliott, to play minutes, you know, when he's a little inconsistent yet, but you know, I just don't think it was the right direction, but that problem has now resolved itself thanks to graduation.
Yeah. To play devil's advocate, I will say sometimes it seemed with Rousey not out there, the offense struggled. And it's like buckets were hard to come by if Howard wasn't getting his shot. And like you said, I see the allure for Wojo playing those two guys together. But you're right. You can't defend with two little guards out there. That's the biggest issue. And Wojo stuck with it all the way till the end, and it just didn't work out. In the end, how many wins did it truly cost Marquette? I don't know. Maybe none, but who knows? Maybe it was two or three. But, yeah, I can't necessarily argue with your take as far as one of the big mistakes of the year.
Okay.
I would say...
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say the only other nominations I would even throw out there would be losing to Georgia at home, and then just the big slump in the middle there when you lost 5 out of 6, including the losses at home to Butler and then Providence on National Marquette Day. But to me, nothing is more regrettable than losing to DePaul.
I will say this, you're right about the 5 out of 6, but I don't think any of those were mistakes. We just weren't very good.
That's true. Not necessarily a mistake, just a very, very bad, very sad times. Very sad.
Just
times.
Not correctable. So anyway, all right, let's move on to a more relevant one, less silly. How about most improved this season?
To me, I think this is a pretty obvious one. It's got to be Sakar Anum. I mean, I think Sakar really, as the season went on, he became a reliable scoring option, and you know, he became a guy that likes. You went into a game late in the year thinking, all right, yeah, he could get us 15 to 20 points. It would not be surprising. He his confidence grew as the season went on. You know, his outside shot could still use work, but he still has, you know, it's still something he has at his disposal at times. And like I said, the confidence attacking the basket, and of course he continues to be good defensively. Maybe that's in relation to some of his teammates, but he is still one of Marquette's better defenders. And I just loved what I saw from Sakar this year, and I'm excited to see what he brings next year.
Yeah, I tend to agree with. The only one I would nominate otherwise is actually Jamal Cain. And maybe it's not appropriate to put him in this category as a freshman. We didn't really see, you know what I mean? Like we didn't know what to expect from him, but like by the end of the NIT, I think Jamal Cain was really coming along, earning some significant minutes. I think you're right that Sakar's probably the right answer here for most improved, just because in the few minutes we saw him in 2 years ago, we're like, wow, this guy plays basketball, you know. So it wasn't a great reference point at the beginning, and like the game against Creighton, he turned it up. And if you can get that out of him consistently next season, I think he becomes, especially if we're playing Howard or Elliott at the one, Sakar probably moves down to the two and becomes critical to provide that slashing attack that we didn't always have this year. So
that's something that's interesting going into next year is, you know, like you could say Marquette technically only has two guards next year with Howard and Elliott. But I think the way it breaks down, because you have so many freaking forwards and you kind of maybe move into more of a positionless basketball, at least between the two and the four. I think even though they may be classified as fours, Sakar and Jamal are essentially going to be guards next year.
Absolutely.
They're going to spend some time at the two and three. Yeah, I would say maybe Marquette technically has four guys who could play a guard spot or at least defend the guard spots. I would expect to see Jamal playing some at the two, even if Marquette adds another guard for next year.
Yeah, well, I mean, Sakar and Jamal are going to have to spend a lot of time at the two and the three. You know, and Sam Hauser, quite frankly, is going to come, I would hope, is going to come down and play the three some. That didn't sound right. He's going to play at the three sometimes, and not play as much four. So it'll be a lot of different guards, or at least a lot of different players playing guard type roles next season. So that'll be interesting. But yep, I think we can go with Sakar as the consensus, you know, Scrambled Eggs most improved player this
season. Yeah, because I think, you know, coming into the year, he was coming off a redshirt year, and we really didn't know what we had in Sakar, right? You know, and like it was almost a thing like, does he have a future here? Because he barely played as a freshman and redshirted last year. Is he ever going to be a consistent player? And I think Wojo's faith in him, as far as redshirting him instead of telling him, you know, maybe you should find somewhere else to play, has paid off this year. And he's still got 2 years left of Sakar. So I'm excited to see what the next 2 years are. And I think Sakar took the leap forward that he and the coaching staff thought he would. So, and I'm excited to see what he has for the next couple years.
Yep. Absolutely agree. Okay. Let's go on to yet, another maybe silly one. So the Darth Vader, no, I am your father, biggest surprise of the season.
Okay. When you texted me the, no, I am your father, like, I wasn't sure, like, wait, where did that mean? But now you incorporate Darth Vader into it, so I see. It's the big reveal.
Yes.
I see what you're going for. Okay, so the biggest surprise for me, I'm going to say Greg Elliott. To me, Greg Elliott was a guy, when I looked at the roster when the season began, you know, wasn't necessarily all that highly recruited, late bloomer. I honestly didn't think he'd see the floor this year, and now granted, at the time we had Hanif Cheatham on the roster, I thought he would be a guy who would just largely warm the bench and may even be a redshirt candidate. But by the time we got to Big East play, he was indispensable. I mean, I mean, you couldn't have won game. There were a lot of games that Marquette could not have won without him, just because of what he brought defensively and being able to, you know, play the point guard a little bit. And you know, when Marcus Howard went out, you needed him on the floor quite a bit. And with that busted up hand, he still was able to shoot the ball fairly well, and he had some big buckets in a few games. So to me, considering I expected literally almost zero for him this year, Greg Elliott proved to be one of Marquette's most reliable players off the bench this year. So for me, it's Greg Elliott.
Yeah, and I think that's perfectly fair. I'm actually going to go with Theo John, because, and I suppose this is a backwards way of getting at most improved, but I'm going to say, to put it mildly, I was concerned about Theo John's ability, you know, even by the start of conference season. He seemed to be there, you know, but just couldn't put the pieces together, was committing fouls left and right, seemingly missing no-footers and layups and dunks. And by the end of the season, I think he showed kind of why he's on this team and what his capabilities are. So I don't know if a switch flipped or if, you know, he just kind of, it needed some time and, you know, big men take a little while to get used to it and comfortable with things. But just from where he was at the start of the season to where he was at the end, I think for me, the big surprise was that Theo John is going to be, a good piece for Marquette going forward. I don't want to say an important piece, but he's going to be someone that can provide some spark maybe off the bench or provide some physicality when the team needs it in the Big East, which is sometimes lacking right now.
Yeah, see, for me, it's almost like Theo John, coming into the year, I thought he would be the best freshman, just because he was the most physically imposing freshman. And, like, I'm kind of with you. Like, in his first couple games, yeah, the game seemed like it was a little too fast for him. So I definitely dialed back my expectations for John after seeing him for the first two or three weeks. But by the end of the year, he was pretty much the guy I thought he would be when the season began, as Marquette's most physical player off the bench. And so, yeah, I think John is about where I expected him to be, just even though I dialed back expectations about a month in. So that's why, to me, Elliott was the guy I never thought Marquette would get anything out of this season. And so that's why, for me, Elliott is my choice for the biggest surprise. The only other thing I kicked around for biggest surprise of the year was that the thing you already mentioned, the comeback at Creighton. Like, that was a game, looking back on it, I'm still stunned that Marquette won.
Yeah, I had to watch that, you know, that weekend. I had to watch that game, the end of the game, two or three times to figure out exactly how it happened. So, yeah, that would be fair to put there. Okay, so let's move on to we got a couple left, maybe three left here, but let's move on to, so who is the most important player next year in your mind?
See, that's interesting. You could go a few different ways. I'm going to say it's the player we don't know yet.
Oh.
I'm going to say it's the point guard to be named later. Because I think I, you know, obviously you're going to hope that the defense improves somehow by some of the guys who are returning who are going to get more playing time. But I think the point guard you add hopefully adds a defensive presence. And I think if you do not add a point guard, I might be a tad concerned about the offense. Now, I think that there'll still be some offensive firepower on this team, but if you don't have a good distributor on this team to get Howard and Hauser and the Hausers and Kane open looks, maybe it could all unravel pretty quickly for Marquette. So for me, the most important player for next year might be the guy we don't know yet.
You know what? That's an excellent one. I hadn't thought about it from that perspective. So I'm going to say you win, but because I have to take a turn because it's my game.
Well, you're making the rules.
I'm making the rules. I think the most important player next year for my money, outside of your outstanding answer, is I think Joey Hauser, simply because. One, you know, he is supposed to be the next big thing, right? The next big recruit for Marquette. And theoretically, what he brings to the game, in terms of what the team can do as a result, is we can just play bigger, right? Like, you can push Sam down to the three. You could play Jamal or Sakar at the two. Then you're playing Greg or Marcus at the one, and some combination of Theo and Matt at the five. And if Joey can eat up minutes and kind of provide be a third or fourth shooter, provide some post-up capability, I think the adaptability that roster has kind of, I don't want to say built around Joey, but kind of leveraging his skill set, again, reported skill set, if you will, I think that he becomes the most important player. Now, he's also going to be a freshman, admittedly a savvy veteran freshman, since he started school at the start of the spring semester here at Marquette, so he's going to not be a freshman like other freshmen are. But I think he's just going to be the really important piece next year.
That's interesting. You phrased it two different ways, and I think it kind of means two different things. You said he's the next big thing, the next big recruit. I think that means two different things in my mind. He is the next big recruit. He is probably one of the best recruits Marquette's had. But to say he's like the next big thing, that he's like a guy who's going to really set the world on fire from day one, I'm not ready to go there just yet with Joey. I think he's going to be good. He's going to play. But I'm not 100% sure he starts, to be honest. Like,
yeah, I think this is the difference. And again, this is where it's good, because you got your viewpoint in mind. I mean, to hear the talk around, you know, the Wisconsin area, obviously the Housers are semi-local folks out of Stevens Point and whatnot. But the, you know, kind of the sense of it, at least locally, is that Joey is, you know, is even better than Sam and is going to be, you know, is going to produce big in his freshman year, or at least that's where the expectations seem to be heading. Now, whether that's true or not, we're going to have to see, but that's kind of the sense of it right now.
I guess I'm just trying to temper my own expectations.
Oh, absolutely. Like, you should.
Yeah. Like, I just don't want to like put Henry Ellenson expectations on Joey Hauser right away. Like, where, you know, he's a program savior and he's going to carry you to a Final Four type thing. You know, I think he'll be good. And will he start? I don't know. He'll get a bunch of minutes for sure, because he can probably play the 3-4 and the 5 next year. So, yeah, he's going to get a ton of minutes. And once he gets right, he can shoot the ball. He can rebound. So he'll have an impact. But as far as, like, you know, first team All Big East type talent, I'm not sure I'm ready to go there for Joey. I don't know if he's a guy who necessarily, like you said, the offense is built around. He probably will be that guy eventually. Will he be that guy next year with Marcus and Sam on the roster? And then, you know, Ed Morrow's going to get his minutes. We'll see what he contributes offensively. Obviously, his big contribution is going to be rebounding next year. So, yeah, I'll be interested to see how Joey and Sam and Ed all kind of fit into the rotation, with, you know, Matt Held is still going to get his minutes in the middle. And then, you know, we'll see what you get from guys. You know, I'm not expecting a ton from Ike Eke next year, although he will be on the floor after redshirting this year. So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of moving parts there. But, yeah, I mean, Joey's going to have an impact, and he is certainly one of the most interesting parts to me for next year, because I want to see exactly how good he is as a freshman. Like, is he going to be like Sam 2.0? And if so, that is awesome. And I'm excited to see how that dynamic works.
Right. Right. Yep. It'll be interesting. So, but like we said, your first answer of, you know, whoever's the point guard to be named later, that they are probably the most important. Yeah. Okay. So we got two left. We're going to go a little bit silly, and then we'll close out with a little more normal one. So this is mostly because we think it's hysterical, because I'm an idiot, but, so take this as it will, but so this is the Phil Take
I'll do it.
Award. You do it, because you're the one that did it.
Phil. Exactly. The worst take of the year.
Take of the year. So take of the year, or what was just a dumb thing to say or a dumb prediction around Marquette basketball.
And yet, like, we could either take one of our own takes
or somebody else's.
Or we could call somebody out and be a real jerk about it.
Correct.
I could go one way or the other. I'll say from my own perspective, expecting Harry Froehlich to be an impact player. I thought he would be a difference maker, and maybe I didn't expect Henry Ellenton type contributions. I thought he would suddenly take the lion's share of the minutes in the middle, be a guy you could pair with Matt Helt, step out, be a stretch four, and by the end he turned out to be just a guy. So I guess that will be my worst take of the year.
Okay, well I'm gonna put myself on the line here and basically say my ridiculous levels of optimism when it came to this team, not all season but nearly all season, especially at the beginning of the year. I think we'd have to go back and listen, and who wants to do that? But I think I had them forecasted as like a 23 or 24 win team and finishing third or fourth in the Big East. Now, to my benefit, that was, the difference there is two or three games, but they easily could have lost two or three more games to make it even worse. So, I don't get any credit there. So I would say my take around how this season would go overall was not great.
You are the optimist. That is the role you play here. And you do it well.
Yeah, well, you've got to own your own space, right?
I'm looking forward to next year's preseason projections when you pick them to win the Big East.
Win the Big East? National championship, man. Come on.
I'm looking forward to that.
Yes. Okay. So let's wrap up this silly award show with the last one. Who was this season's MVP?
Well, before the year, I picked Marcus Howard to be – no, wait, did I? I think I picked Marcus Howard to be the leading scorer. I guess I did pick Sam to be the MVP.
You did pick Sam.
I have to go back and check the tape on paint touches on that one. But in the end, I think it was Sam Hauser just because he did the most on both ends of the floor, whether it was – he was a good defender, especially when he was guarding guys in the post. He shot the ball incredibly well, almost 50% from three. And he probably – his percentage would have been much better if he wasn't playing on one leg for like the last two or three weeks of the season.
Yep.
As that pain kind of went to a new level. I think paint touches was right when they pointed out that in that DePaul Big East tournament game, he took a spill, like diving for a loose ball. And when he got up, he looked like he was in a lot of pain.
Yep.
And I don't think he was I think he had kind of hit his pain threshold there. So I think his numbers dipped after that because the pain had just gotten too much. But the fact that he battled through that injury that apparently happened in September, and he didn't really show it at all up until really, like I said, that fall, diving for a loose ball in the DePaul game, I really couldn't tell that he was hurt. He had just battled through it all year, shot an incredible percentage. His offensive rating was, top 15 in the country when it was all said and done?
Yep.
So, for
he was 11th
all around contribution, yeah, just incredible the numbers he put up this year without being 100% really at any point in the season. To me, Sam Hauser was the most important player for Marquette this year.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with that totally. One, because I said he was going to be the MVP this season, and two, I think. You could just see it in the NIT. I mean, Sam, you can argue, and paint touches certainly did, but you can argue whether or not Sam Hauser should have played in that NIT. But I mean, the fact that he was playing on one leg and they put him out there says, hey, this guy is kind of the guy we need out there and be able to play. And I don't want to say he stirs the drink, but he's kind of critical to what they're doing on both ends of the floor. And I think it'll be really exciting to see, he finished 11th in the country in offensive rating. Imagine what he can do if he's fully healthy all season. And
I expect him to be number one.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well what you would expect that from a national championship next year, right?
Number two behind Matt Helt is what I'm
saying. Well, that's true. That's true. Matt Helt will be the number one. With Jalen Brunson gone, there's no one else but Matt Helt that can step up and fill that number one
exactly.
spot. But yeah, I think it was just clearly everybody else had their moments, and everyone else was had their flashy moments. I mean, Rousey was just was unconscious from some deep range shots. Howard obviously had the 52 against Providence and some other big games, but Sam Hauser was arguably the most consistent and the best two-way player that Marquette had, right? I mean, other players were better offensively. Sakar was better defensively. But Sam, until the injury kind of got the better of him late in the season, was probably our best two-way player. So I think he was clearly the most valuable, and I'm sure he's very excited that we've named him as such. But we'll see if he keeps it up, we can get him some hardware.
Yeah, I'm sure that that means as much to him as really, you know, being named to an All Big East team, which he wasn't. So I mean, it's a nice compensation, you know, to be named a fake award on our stupid podcast. So it's something.
Right. It's not nothing.
It's not nothing. I mean, nobody else won that thing, so he got it. You know, one thing we didn't do in the last podcast, and I think we probably should do before we wrap this up, is just kind of a salute to Andrew Rousey, the Marquette's one graduating senior. You know, he had a great career, and he's been a thrill to watch. As maddening as maybe he is sometimes with some of his wild shots and his, you know, struggles on defense, Marquette would not have been nearly as fun to watch without him. Some of his ridiculous threes, you know, setting records for points in a season, threes in a season. And he had a pretty good Portsmouth Invitational this week, this past week as well. So, like, I don't know necessarily that he's going to make an NBA roster, but I think he probably has been making himself some money the way he's been playing, whether, you know, he can get himself to get a better contract overseas, or I don't know if he'll get a chance to play in the summer league for an NBA team or whatever, but I wish him well in his future endeavors, wherever they may be, whether it's G League here in the United States, whether he shocks us all and makes an NBA team, or whether he's playing in Europe or Australia or wherever he's going to go. So he has been a thrill to watch, and I think all Marquette fans should thank him for, you know, his contributions to Marquette in his 3 years here.
Absolutely, and it's been good to have one of those players on your roster that other teams love to hate. You know, the JP McCura type, where everyone else you play against is like, man, I hate that guy because one, he's
exactly
really good, and two, he just drives me nuts, right? So it was good. It was a good player. He was a good guy to cheer for on this team, and he was frustrating at times, but I would say definitely the good outweighed the bad, and he gave this team a little bit of an edge at times, which I think was very needed because I think they were still very young and not sure how to how to really get physical and kind of get up in people's faces. And I think Rousey brought a little bit of that. So
they needed that leadership at the point guard spot too.
Yeah, so exactly.
And he did a great job. And he forced me to change my stance on pump faking and then leading into guys to draw fouls on 3-point shots. So I've had to applaud it for the last 2 years. So now next year I can go back and saying I hate that play.
Well, but, we have to say RIP the thing? Like that's now done, right? That gets retired.
Should,
no one else has it.
We should play some sad music and, you know, retire the thing. But it was fun. And I like I said, his name will be up at the name will be in the record books forever. Who knows if anybody will surpass that points and threes record? Who knows? Maybe Marcus Howard can go after it next season, but he has it for now, so you can't take that away from him. So, a good run for Andrew Rousey at Marquette. It certainly has been a lot of fun.
Well done, sir. Hey, Phil, well done.
Before we get out of here, any final thoughts on the tournament, Villanova winning the national championship and all that? You know, another good thing for the Big East to have the crown back in the conference.
Not to mention the money.
Yeah, the money's great too. So, you know, thanks for being the one Big East team that consistently goes deep in March. Although I guess Xavier normally does. They just tripped up this year. But and that's the one thing I will say about, being the whole Big East United thing once the tournament begins. It's cool that we can all kind of rally around each other and cheer for the teams to go deep. But eventually we do need to see some other teams really making a lot of noise in the tournament. It can't just be Villanova carrying it for everybody else. It would be nice to see another Big East team get to a Final Four. I don't know if anybody's winning a national championship anytime soon. Villanova might do it again next year, depending on who comes back. But for me, seeing Villanova win again was great, but now I'm ready to see some other Big East teams make a little more noise on a national level. And I know Xavier has been doing that, but now they lost Chris Mack. So, I don't know if they'll necessarily come back to the back too far. The way Xavier hires coaches, they always seem to find somebody who's really good. So, Travis Steele might win 25 games next year. Who knows? But that was kind of my takeaway. Great for the Big East, but now I'd like to see somebody else kind of step it up.
Well, and I think overall the tournament was very exciting. I think Villanova winning, I think the stat I saw was they won all six of their tournament games by double digits. So it kind of validated kind of what we saw all season in terms of, beating Villanova was really, really hard. And maybe you some sort of weird version of the transitive property say, well, we fought Villanova close both times, so clearly there's talent, so maybe there's hope for next year or whatever. But I don't know. I think the pieces are there. I think the season was probably more frustrating than I anticipated. But that's what my role on this podcast is. But I think there's plenty of cause for hope for next season. The Big East, with the exception of probably Villanova, will generally take a step back, I think. Marquette should be taking a step forward. So that in combination and – Villanova is still going to be tough, but Marquette should be in a position, hopefully, to be, because I agree with you about the Big East, other than Villanova, needs to step up nationally. Hopefully Marquette will put itself in a position where it can be that team that steps up.
Yeah, I think the tough thing for us, because obviously we, even though I joke about you being the optimist, we're all optimists to some point when it comes to Marquette, and we want validation for our own program. And I think most of us expected to be back in the tournament this year, but nationally, most national prognosticators had Marquette missing the tournament again as being like the seventh best team in the Big East and missing the tournament. That's exactly what they were. So as far as national expectations, Marquette was right there where everybody thought they were. And I think the issue for me is that the expectations are right there, being seventh, being an NIT team. And I think hopefully next year the preseason expectations, most of them have Marquette in the tournament, and most of them have Marquette in the top five in the Big East. So hopefully they can live up to those expectations, and maybe ours, whatever we, when the final roster is set, whatever expectations we set can be met, or at least they can be close to them enough that, any hot seat talk can kind of die down and we can kind of move forward with Wojo's plan for this program. And the next 2 years could hopefully be really good as Marquette is very experienced. But yeah, I guess it was some of us may call Marquette a disappointment this last year because we were in the tournament last year and we wanted to make it again this year and Marquette fell short. So from that perspective, it felt like a disappointment. And even Wojo said when he was talking about the NIT, it's like, hey, it's not what you want, but it's an opportunity. So obviously the coaching staff obviously wanted to be back in the tournament, and they were disappointed that they didn't make it. But next year it is time to take a step forward, and that's kind of what we've been saying for several months now. But yeah, again, we'll see how the roster shakes out over the summer and see what kind of talent Marquette can add to supplement the talent that they already have going in the next year.
Yeah, I agree with – I think what we – would help just the fans generally – is if the expectations, not just from us, but from the general, the sports writer glitterati kind of perspective is higher for Marquette. I mean, I think people are just kind of tired of Marquette kind of being an also ran in the mentions. And next year we'll kind of tell the tale is has Marquette turned the corner where not just us but other sports writers and prominent national folks recognize how well Marquette's put the pieces together and frame them up that way. Otherwise, it's going to be – it could be another long season, right, if maybe we're overly optimistic and the sports writers go, hey, you know, kind of you got to slow your roll there. It's not that good. That would be another tough season. But we'll see what comes of it.
Yeah, so we'll be monitoring that all summer long. Well, again, podcasts obviously come much less frequently over the summer. We maybe do about one a month or so every 4 to 6 weeks as news warrants it. So not sure exactly when we'll check in with you guys again. It'll probably, you know, be, I don't know, maybe late May sometime, maybe, you know, maybe in June. Depends on when people commit and if there are any other kind of turnover on the roster and any other scheduling news. We didn't really talk about the schedule. I think the podcast gone on long enough. Maybe we could talk about that next time around. I did see Buffalo was added to the schedule. So that's a nice bye game, I guess, Marquette's going to have next year. Maybe some more schedule news will come out by the time we have another podcast. But that's just about going to do it for this edition of Scrambled Eggs. Again, we always thank you for listening. You can always hit us up on Twitter with your thoughts, maybe your questions, anything you want to see answered in the next podcast, whenever that may be. I'm Joe McCann 3. It was MOOF23. You can hit up Crack Sidewalks as the team handle. You can leave your comments on cracksidewalks.com. Be sure to go into Apple Podcasts, rate, review, and subscribe. So next time we do a podcast, you won't miss it. It'll be right there in your feed. And we also have a Scrambled Eggs Facebook page as well. Phil, any final thoughts before we wrap up this off-season check-in?
No, I think we've covered it all. It's good. It was a good run. We're going to take a little time between podcasts, and it will probably if most important player to be named later that you mentioned shows up on the roster, maybe that'll be the bat signal to get us back out. But hope
maybe
everyone
we'll have
enjoys
a TBT
their
team to talk about by the time. I've noticed, yes, like the tournament is cranked up, but I haven't seen Golden Eagles alumni pop up on the teams to vote on yet. So I don't know if Marquette's going to do a TBTB.
Oh, I hope they do. That was one of my favorite summertime thrills.
I enjoy the TBT. It's been fun seeing Marquette alums get together, but I don't know. Maybe they're working on it. They haven't gotten any commitments from anybody who can do it yet, but we'll maybe that'll pop up over the next few weeks as well, so keep an eye on that. So that's good. That's going to do it for us here on Scrambled Eggs, everybody. Until next time, seashells and balloons.